So I have a confession to make. I like superheroes. You know, as in DC, Marvel, comics, universe, and that fits my Enneagram profile, which says this: you are concerned for the underdog and want to protect those who are underprivileged. You want to make the world a fair and just place in which to live. So maybe that, I don't know, gives me some kind of sense of justification. It's okay to watch episodes of Daredevil on Netflix, which I do. Matt Murdock is Daredevil. And like many superheroes, his true identity is unknown. By day, he's a lawyer, charming, smart, compassionate, and blind. By night, he's a ninja-like vigilante crime fighter. As his closest friends become increasingly amazed at Matt's capabilities, in spite of his blindness, finally, they learn of his true identity, at least some of them, the close ones. And the nature of their relationships with him change dramatically. I mean, how do you be buds with a superhero? You know, that's kind of hard. One thing is certain. The closer you get to the superhero, the more exposed you are to the risks associated with his or her mission. It's kind of like life with Jesus. Luke tells us of a story from Jesus' life. It's recorded in chapter 5. Early in the morning, Jesus is out at the seaside, the Sea of Galilee. A large crowd of people is gathered around. He's teaching them. And people are starting to crowd in. They want to get close. And it's not just so that they can hear better. He's been in town for a few days. He's already been doing the stuff. He's been healing people, delivering people. And so this is a chance for them to get up close, to make contact with him. When the teaching is over and the ministry time begins, they want to be right in the front row so that they can receive. Well, Jesus notices that there are two boats over on the shore. And he knows, actually, the guys that are, the fishermen that are there, they're washing their nets, cleaning up. They've been out all night. They've been working hard. Wasn't a very productive expedition that night. Jesus gets into Simon's boat, and he asks him, could you push out a little bit from the shore? And so Simon and a couple of his companions, they do that. They push out. Jesus now has some breathing room. But also what the topography of the area provides a natural amphitheater. So his voice is amplified. So people way in the back now can hear him. He doesn't have to make an effort, doesn't even have to raise his voice. And after he finishes teaching, he asks Simon to push out a little bit into deeper water. So they do that. And after they get out a little deeper, he says, now I want you to put the nets down into the water. Try to catch some fish. Simon, somewhat uncomfortably, I think he looks at his companions, then looks back at Jesus and says, Master, you know, all night we were working hard and we didn't catch a thing. But because you ask, we'll do it. We'll put the nets down. And they do. They put the nets overboard. And within a matter of minutes, there is all kinds of activity in the water. And very shortly, the nets are just full of fish. I mean, to the breaking point. Simon motions for his partners who have the other boat to come out and help out. They empty these nets into both boats. And both boats are nearly sinking from all of the fish that they have caught. As the combined wave of adrenaline and astonishment begins to subside, Simon Peter begins to experience a new wave of emotion, and this time it's shame and it's fear. He has seriously underestimated the capabilities of this guy, Jesus. Suddenly he realizes, I didn't know. I mean, I knew he was a rabbi. I know he's done some pretty amazing things, but suddenly he has the sense he's in the presence of somebody holy, somebody who walks with God, who hears from God, who's in touch with the supernatural. And the only thing he can think to do is to get on his knees in front of Jesus and say, Lord, just get away from me. Go away from me. I don't deserve to be hanging around you. I don't deserve to be in your company. Jesus very simply says, don't be afraid. From now on, you're going to be catching people. So they get it all, boats back into the shore. And Peter and his partners, yeah, it's like they hand the keys to the boat to their companions and they say, you guys are running the business for now. We're leaving. They left everything and they began to follow Jesus everywhere that he went. You know, Jesus says those same words to all of us. Don't be afraid. Just follow me. Jesus demonstrated his mastery, his sovereignty over Peter's area of expertise. See, sometimes what we do is we compartmentalize Jesus and faith and religion, and we don't see how it intersects with real life. That's kind of what Peter did. I mean, in all the questions of religion, Jesus, you're the expert, you're the master. And suddenly Jesus demonstrates to Peter and all the rest of the guys, hey, I know a lot about fishing also. I know exactly where the fish are. I know exactly when they're coming by. I know exactly what you need to do to catch the fish. Do you believe that about what you're doing? Do you believe that Jesus knows how to do your job better than you do? He knows how to have a good marriage better than you do. He knows how to raise your children better than you do. You think, wait a minute, Jesus was never married. Jesus didn't have any children. It's like, yeah, and Jesus was never a fisherman either, right? Peter had a crisis. Clarity, right? I have seriously miscalculated who this guy is. The clarity brings the crisis. I realize I have to change how I think about my relationship with this individual. I have to change what I do, how I respond. Because now the demands of this person are different upon my life. And Jesus, you know, he called him to take a huge step of faith. Huge step of faith. Leave everything, leave your business, come join my band, and we're hitting the road, we're traveling. But you know, he didn't just do the miracle with the fish to like, wow, Peter, you know, if I give you a command, Peter, you got to respond, because look at all these fish I just pulled up. He was also demonstrating to Peter that he could care for Peter. He could take care of Peter. He could take care of Peter's family. He could take care of Peter's old business. They don't have to worry. You can leave and you can follow me. You can go wherever it is that I ask you to go, and I'll take care of you. That is huge. That is huge. I know what that's like. 1989, my wife and I, we joined the staff of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. You're supposed to raise funds to be on staff. You're like a missionary. And we didn't have a lot of connections, and we didn't have a lot of funding. And so for several years, I was working part-time at another job. The pay was really good. The benefits were outstanding. 2/3 of our income, all of our benefits are coming from this other job. And after doing ministry part-time and this other job part-time for several years, then the Lord kind of made it very clear to me, I want you to quit that other job. Ministry's expanding, and you're being stretched, and it's time to take a huge step of faith. So I thought, okay, I'll do it, you know. And I go to work. I worked early mornings, you know, and so about 8:30 in the morning, I got off work, and I gave just before I left, I gave my boss my 3-week notice. I'm driving home, and I'm just thinking, what have I just done? 2/3 of our income, all of our benefits. I was just like, where is the money going to come from? I get home, and our mail came first thing in the morning. We were at the beginning of the route for our postal worker. And so I get home about 9. The mail's already in the mailbox. I pull the mail out, and there's an envelope. And it's from people that I don't recognize immediately who it's from, but I open it up, and I realize it's from some alumni from the university where we are currently on staff with InterVarsity. And I'm just acquainted with these people. I don't even really know them. There's a check inside for $1,200. And they said, we're in between churches right now, and we have no place to tithe. So this is 2 months' tithe, and we'll continue for 10 more months after that. I was just like, that's like all the fish coming into two boats, and it's like, and I never looked back after that. I mean, it was such a remarkable display of faithfulness. You can trust me when I call you to step out in faith. Never looked back after that. You know, you think at this point then, in the story of the disciples, okay, now they understand who Jesus is, right? Well, we know that's not true. That story is recorded in Luke chapter 5. And so over the next couple of years, they're going to get to know more and more about who Jesus is. And it's not the first time they've had to face, not the last time they're going to face this question about what does it really mean to follow Jesus? Because a little bit later in the book, we read of another encounter. Jesus has just fed at least 5,000 people from just a little lunch. You know, miraculous display. And of course, his 12 disciples, they had the front row seats to all of this. They were the ones that were distributing the food. Even if the people in the back didn't fully understand what was going on, the 12 who had to distribute the food knew exactly what was happening. Amazing display of power. And they're beginning to feel like, wow, you know, we're in the right place at the right time. Yeah. And then they break away for a while. They break away from the crowds. And it says that Jesus and his disciples were off by themselves. And Jesus was praying alone. And then he turns to the 12 and he asks them the question, who do the people say that I am? What's the scuttlebutt? What's the word on the street? You know, what do you hear people talking about? Who do they say I am? And so they give them various answers. Well, some people say they confuse you with John the Baptizer. Others say you're Elijah, or maybe one of the other prophets that's come back from the dead. And then he asks them, okay, but who do you say that I am? It's Simon Peter. He's the first one, as usual, to open his mouth. He's kind of the spokesperson for the band. You know, and he says, well, you're the Messiah, the one that God has sent. Jesus says, yeah, that's right. Don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone what you've discovered. And then he begins to explain what's coming, right? The Son of Man is going to have to suffer a lot. be rejected by the leaders, the chief priests, the scribes. The whole religious establishment is going to reject me, and they're going to reject you. And you know what comes next? Execution. But on the third day, by the way, I will come back from the grave. I don't think they even heard that at that point. You know, they're just hearing, what? Rejection? Arrest? Torture? Suffering? Execution? In fact, Mark, at this point in his gospel, says Peter pulls Jesus aside and says, what are you talking about? There's no way. And Jesus rebukes him. He says, you don't understand. And then listen to these words. You can read them up on the screen. And he said to all of them, those who want to come with me must say no to the things they want, pick up their crosses every day, and follow me. Those who want to save their lives will lose them. But those who lose their lives for me will save them. What good does it do for people to win the whole world but lose their lives by destroying them? If people are ashamed of me and what I say, then the Son of Man will be ashamed of those people when he comes in the glory that he shares with the Father and the holy angels. Yeah, I want you to follow me, and I also want you to be clear on what that means. Those must have been hard, hard words for them to hear. I mean, they're thinking kingdom, victory, and we're the ones that are going to be with him the whole way. Yeah, there's going to be a kingdom, and there is going to be a victory of sorts, but not in the way that you thought. Jesus made it clear that being his disciple means unapologetically identifying with him and following his path, his example. In other words, embracing a life of possible rejection, suffering, maybe even execution. And somehow by following that path, that is the pathway to real life, to glory. The things that people really want, the things that our souls crave, the only way you get there is you follow the way of Jesus. These are hard words for anybody in any time, in any situation. And a lot of times we want to make it easy for ourselves and we want to make it easier for other people. So we say things like, could you just make a little space in your life for Jesus? Could you just give him a little room? You know, could you just consider some of the things he might be saying? But see, here's the thing. Who do you say that he is? Is he the Lord? And if he is the Lord, then what does that mean? What does that mean for our lives if he's the Lord? It changes everything. It's not about making space for him anymore. It's about shifting the orientation of our lives. Right? This is the Copernican Revolution. We used to think the sun revolved around the earth. That's kind of how it is a lot of times with our lives in Jesus. He's got to revolve around me. And he says, that's not how this works. You're out of touch with reality. That's not reality. The reality is the sun is there and everything else, the planets revolve around the sun. You need to understand that, and you need to live like that's true. And here's, if you hear nothing else this morning, I hope you hear this. We miss out. We miss out on the fullness of life with God. Life with a capital L. We miss out because we hold back. We don't give everything. We reserve some of it for ourselves. And in that way, we hurt ourselves. You only discover those amazing promises of provision, of life, of fullness, when you step out and you leave everything. It's counterintuitive, But that's the way it works. That's what faith is. That's the whole nature of faith. When we surrender, when we fully surrender, then we will experience the abundance. Can you believe that? Well, there's lots of obstacles to making a full commitment, right? And one of them's fear. We're just afraid. And sometimes we're afraid of failure. And a lot of us, we've already made this commitment. We might have even made it several times. And then we're going along and then we fall flat on our face or we go off in that direction, go off in that direction. We don't even want to make the commitment again because we don't even trust ourselves to keep the commitment. So we hold back. We think that's maybe being more honest even, you know. Or we're afraid of losing something. There's a cost to following Jesus. There's a cost to getting involved. Time. If he's the Lord and I follow him, that means my time is not my own. It's not just, I'll give him Sunday mornings. Maybe I'll give them 10 minutes in the morning before I go to work or go about my day or 10 minutes at night. It's like my time, all of my time belongs to Jesus. Wow. That's huge. My money. All of my money belongs to Jesus. My freedom. Oh, that's the hard one, isn't it? My freedom. The next time I'm sitting down to watch an episode of Daredevil on Netflix, I'm going to be thinking about this, you know. It's like, wait a minute, I'm taking Jesus' time and Jesus' energy, and is this right? Is this okay? Here's the thing. A lot of times, I don't even ask him. I just go do it because that's what I want to do, and I'm tired, and now I can take a break and watch an episode or two or three or maybe even four of Daredevil, you know, and it's just like, what am I doing? I get done with that, and I'm like, oh, that was really spiritually refreshing, you know. And for those moments when I've really empathized with people and really gotten into it, and I feel like I've spent emotional energy, compassion, I've experienced compassion while I'm watching this, and I've touched absolutely no one by experiencing all of this compassion, you know. It's just been this vicarious thing. What a trip that is. You know, this happens all the time for all of us, or a lot of us. My time belongs to Jesus. My energy belongs to Jesus. My compassion needs to be directed somewhere else, not in my living room. Changes everything. But we're afraid. We're afraid of giving that up. But there's also human limitations, too. We just need to be honest, right? It's like when you're hiking. You know, my family, we like to go hiking when we're on vacations, you know. And you know what happens when you're hiking, especially if it's a rocky terrain. After a while, you don't want to trip over stuff, so you're just focused at the 5 feet in front of you. And that's how you go on the hike. And it doesn't matter where you are. You could be in the Rocky Mountains. You could be in the most beautiful place, but you're missing it all out there because you don't want to trip and fall, and so you're just staring at those 5 feet, the immediate. We focus on the immediate, and we lose sight of the big picture, right? So easy to do that. We live our lives like that. And we focus on what we can actually see with our physical eyes. Yeah, the material realm, that's what's real. We lose sight of the spiritual realities, the stuff that we can't see, the stuff that requires faith. And then we just forget what's important. What's really important? But we need to remember the question, who do you say I am? Who do you say I am? And then we need to remember the call. Don't be afraid. Come follow me. Come follow me. Don't be afraid. Paul says in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, he's speaking to believers. He's assuming that the people that are reading this, they're members of the home groups in Rome. And he says, I urge you, offer yourselves to Jesus, to God, as living sacrifices. The problem with living sacrifices, you've heard this, they roll off the altar. The dead sacrifices, they stay put. The live sacrifices, they roll off. I roll off. You roll off. And that's why he says, do it every day. And even Jesus said that, remember? He said, you take up your cross daily, every day. It's a daily practice. So if we're going to be intentional about following Jesus in 2019, that's the place to start. So we surrender ourselves. Okay, I'll go through the Copernican revolution that I need to go through. I'll recognize that actually you're the center of the universe, and I'll let my life revolve around you. And then each and every day I'll start, just the beginning of the day, and I'll offer myself. And I challenge you to do that. I do that. I try to remember to do that. First thing in the morning, I get up, I sit down at my desk where I'm going to meet Jesus. And if I remember, many days I do, and I just say, okay, today I surrender again. I'm yours today. I belong to you. Everything that I have belongs. This body belongs to you. The mind, the desires, really what your desires for you, for the eternal, I give that to you. I just go through the process of offering myself to him. Daily surrender. I want to take a few moments just to reflect, give you some time just to think. And Matt, you can come back up. Where are you in this whole process? Now, maybe you're somebody you've been kind of looking at Jesus from a distance. You're one of those people that shows up at the sea kind of thing, but you're way in the back. You don't even want to get too close. You sense that there's some truth here. You sense there's something real about this, and yet you're keeping your distance. You know what Jesus is saying to you? He's saying it's time to make a commitment. You know, I really wish you were the guy that could be in the boat with me. That's what I really want. Get in the boat with me. Let's go fishing. I'll show you some stuff if you can get in the boat with me. Maybe today, maybe this morning, he'd want you to make that commitment finally. Knowing full well that you're going to have to recommit because you're not going to carry it out, but maybe time to get close, time to get up close and personal with Jesus. Maybe you're somebody who has done this in the past. Several times you've committed yourself, but he's just asking you to do it again. Are you holding back anything? See, that's the question we all got to ask. So let's just take a few moments. Let's invite him to speak to us. Matt's going to play a song and sing. We're not going to sing. We're just going to listen. We're going to allow God to speak and allow him to direct your thoughts.